Lehrblick, Lehrporträts. Der Podcast für Einblicke in aktuelle hochschuldidaktische Fragen. In jeder Episode kommen wir mit einer Persönlichkeit ins Gespräch, die zum Thema Hochschullehre etwas zu sagen hat.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of our podcast series. I'm Birgitta Welker and with me today is Bob Uttel. Bob is a professor of psychology at Mount Royal University in Calgary, Canada. His expertise lies in cognitive psychology, focusing on areas such as memory, intelligence, aging, assessment, and psychometrics. Bob has contributed to several high-impact papers, particularly examining the validity and biases of students' evaluations of teaching effectiveness, in short, SAT ratings. His work on SAT-related research has caught the attention of various news outlets, including Inside Higher Ed, University Herald, The Guardian, and more. Bob, a warm welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for the invitation.
So let's start directly. Bob, in your work on student evaluation of teaching, you've been criticizing the use of standardized instruments for measuring teaching effectiveness. Could you expand what arguments and findings led you to this conclusion?
Yes. So the first problem which we have is that there is no accepted definition of effective teaching. So we do not know what it is that we actually want to measure. And people have thought about it. There's lots of experts discussing this issue. And basically, they all agree that the only thing which we know is that the effective teaching ought to lead to increased student learning. And so from that, people came up with the idea of these multi-section studies, which were designed to sort of examine the validity of SCTs, that is student evaluation of teaching ratings, relative to a professor's contribution to student learning. So basically what you have is you have some large course, which you split into a number of sections, and professors get randomly assigned into sections, and then they do the teaching using the same syllabus, same book, same exams, etc. And then towards the end of the course, you give them SCTs. And if professors are effective in increasing students' learning, that professor's class ought to do better than other professors. So there should be correlation between SCTs, average SCTs of the class, and the average final exam grade.
Okay, and is it the case?
Well, Cohen in 1981, in a famous meta-analysis, said that that is the case. He said that the correlation was something like 0.41 or 0.43. You can wonder whether that's a sufficient correlation to evaluate professors on, because it, of course, explains only about 16% of variance. But there's a fundamental problem with that meta-analysis. It did not consider bias of small studies. And so if you actually redo the analysis, meta-analysis, which is what we did, you find out that the correlation between SCT and student learning attributable to the professor in multi-section studies is zero after you control for students' prior knowledge and intelligence.
Okay, so intelligence is the most important factor that influences the learning outcomes. Would you agree?
I'm not sure if it's the most important factor. It is certainly a very important factor. But there's also another important factor, and that is student motivation. So how much is a student interested in actually studying the particular topic in a particular course? It is a well-established finding in cognitive psychology that if we are interested in learning something, we learn it much faster than if we don't want to learn it.
However, would it be possible that lecturers might influence the students' interest in the subject they're teaching? And so they would indirectly be kind of responsible or able to influence the learning outcomes?
It might, but we know from research now that prior student interest in a course before they take it is one of the best determinants of what student evaluation of teaching ratings students actually give.
So as we were talking about biases lie in students' abilities or motivation, are there some other bias that could influence or distort the results of student evaluation?
Yeah, so, you know, basically we know that the validity is zero, right? And the second way how to get into validity is to look at whether these SETs are influenced by various factors which have nothing to do with the professor. So, for example, you can have a class size. You get assigned to teach small classes, let's say up to 20 people. You will have more time to interact with each student. You will be able to learn every student's name. Whereas if you are assigned a class with 300 people, good luck to you, unless you are some kind of a special person who can memorize 300 names, you stand no chance, right? If you have a class with 10 people, let's say some 4,000 level course, 4-year course, then of course you will know everybody and you will have interaction with everybody, right? So the class size makes a difference. Another big effect is, we talked about student ability, student motivation, but also field. So today, if you are assigned to teach some kind of a quantitative class, good luck to you, because almost no one in your class is actually interested in taking it. So in psychology, we have, you know, we have a requirement for statistics and research methods, because of course, we rely on that. And we have done a survey of students asking them how interested they are in taking various classes which our department offers. And classes which involve statistics or research methods were 6 standard deviation below the mean of our normal content classes. And of course, the most interested people are most interested in taking something like abnormal psychology, social psychology, and so on. So now a professor teaching abnormal psychology is facing students who are by and large very interested in the topic. Professor facing introductory statistics is facing students who don't want to be there.
That would apply to mandatory courses, I think. They should be poorer rated than courses the students can choose by themselves and by their interest, right?
That's right. Yeah, there is some research looking into that. Right? And so, of course, courses which are elective, which you want to take, are typically rated higher than courses which are required.
Okay, so we have some student characteristics, we have some course characteristics that might influence the student ratings. In one of your texts, you mentioned a study suggesting that incentives like giving chocolate can influence student evaluation. How would you explain such strange findings, and what psychological factors could be saying students' opinions in this particular instance?
I don't think it's a very strange finding, right? So we have 2 randomized studies showing that chocolates and chocolate cookies improve student evaluation teaching ratings by about, 0.3 to 0.5 standard deviation, right?
This is a lot.
That's a lot, yes. It makes the difference, right? And it's a simple explanation. You bring something which students like, they will give you high ratings. If you say that SETs are basically measures of student satisfaction, and a dictionary definition of that is, happy, pleased feelings because of something that happened to you, right? So anything which increases happy, pleased feelings on a part of the students is likely to increase student evaluation of teaching. So low workload, high grades, chocolates, home-baked cookies, anything which you can do to increase student satisfaction. And so SETs, when you actually, we didn't talk about this, but one question, of course, is how are these used, right? And so in some cases, or many cases, some kind of committee or perhaps a departmental chair decides that, anybody who's above the average is satisfactory and anybody who's below the average is not satisfactory. So now you set up a race. You have to be in a top half of a racing professoriate to be satisfactory and not having to go to talk to your chair or to your dean about your low student evaluation of teaching. In fact, in one commercial system, they recommend that only the top 30% of professors are satisfactory. So 70% by definition are not satisfactory, no matter what they do. You may be an Olympian, but you are still unsatisfactory because you are in the bottom 70%, right? And so that sets up a race of a really, really high stakes. and anything goes, right? So cookies, lower the standards, give grades for nothing. We have a massive increase in grade inflation. Today, the average grade is basically A minus, which would be unheard of 40 years ago, right? And so all these factors influence SATs. Professors learn what influences SATs. So before we had the SATs online, you could see professors going around with bags of chocolates or chocolate bars, distributing SATs in paper and giving chocolate bars with it in order to make students happy.
So if I summarize for the moment, it can be said that there's no objective method for measuring teaching quality. However, SATs might perhaps measure how well teachers manage to meet students' expectation in good quality teaching.
I would not say that it measures student expectations in quality of teaching. I would say that it measures student satisfaction. And the student satisfaction is encompassing, right? So if I want to get an easy grade and you satisfied me, then I will be happier than if you give me a D.
Do students know their grades in Canada or at your university before they are doing the SATs?
No, they don't. But basically they do, because of course you typically have at least one midterm. And so of course SATs after that midterm, so that it gives you some idea. And for example, if you are a teacher or professor who assesses the students by multiple assignments or perhaps multiple tests, then the students will basically know what their grade is by the time they get into SATs.
The American as well as the German Sociological Association suggest using SATs not for summative evaluation, but for formative evaluation. They recommend it as an opportunity to gather students' feedback, their point of views on, let me say, different aspects of a course. Would you agree to such scenarios?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with a professor surveying his or her own students to find out how they perceive various aspects of your course. That seems not only reasonable, but it also seems desirable. But it has to be the survey by the professor of the student in a professor's class, which no one else sees. Because then the professor who is actually teaching the class knows what was going on, knows what questions he or she wants to actually ask, which are somehow important for the, maybe you are teaching the particular class for the first time. You want to know what the students had the most troubles with. So you may actually ask them. You may use a different software. You want to get a feedback on that software. So those are the important uses of student feedback, but not for the evaluation of the professor's teaching effectiveness.
So as we learned, and to sum up the gist of your findings, it seems you've concluded that for different reasons, measuring a teacher's effectiveness is hardly possible. But flipping the script, can we identify and measure teaching behaviors that clearly signal ineffectiveness? So are there some signs you could use to say, oh, this is a critical point, this might be quite ineffective in teaching?
Yeah, so a number of people actually point out that, when we are trying to think about what is effective teaching, that people disagree, right? That they just cannot come to any agreement. To give you an example, somebody may say, well, it's an effective teaching to call on students during the class to answer some question. Other professors will say, well, no, that's anxiety producing. It's putting the student on the spot. It's demeaning. It's negative, right? And however, almost everybody would agree that not showing up for your classes is not effective teaching. Showing up in your class, reading a chapter from the textbook verbatim, is also not effective teaching. So there's a number of these things which lots of people would agree, right? So even if you say, giving students feedback. Giving students feedback 2 months later, that's not very effective. And so you could have some kind of a survey. We, in fact, I proposed one survey like that in the latest paper, where you ask students to say whether certain things, objectively observable things, actually happened in the class. Let's say I got a feedback or response to my email within 3 business days. And so now, if 50% of the students say, the professor, let's say, didn't show up in class, and the other 50% say he did, well, somebody's not telling the truth, so to speak. And now you can actually go and verify what actually happened. And so use it as an alarm for, you know, ineffective teaching. And in fact, if you know, if you are around university for a decade or two, you will realize that those ineffective teaching really fall into those categories. You know, people don't show enough for classes, dismissing the classes halfway through or something of that sort, right? Not providing the feedback. Students don't get the grades ever, maybe the final one, but that's it. So those are ineffective teaching behaviors.
Okay, and according to your findings, it might be helpful to identify such points or signals. In your latest text, you summarize some of them as an indicator for ineffective teaching. That might be the basis for the deans to talk about what happens in this class or to identify ineffective lecturers, right?
That's right. It would simply be as an alarm, right? It should not be used as an evaluation, but simply, okay, students are in the class. We also need to consider the fact that, you know, when we say students are in a class, some are and some are not. So it's an important thing to sort of remember, right? But then when you have some of these objectively observable behaviors and 90% of the students say, yeah, he didn't show up most of the time, well, you should probably look what happened. And then, you know, determine what actually happened. And then you have some basis for some kind of evaluation or corrective action or something like that.
Okay, so instead of trying to measure teaching effectiveness, you would suppose to identify more ineffective teaching. So to flip it around.
That's right. Yeah. So you basically look for ineffective teaching and what you could do about it. Right. There's another method which we which I discussed in that paper, which was used in one university in Alberta, where they basically use a statistical definition of an outlier. So as long as you are within the bounds of the racing professoriate, and you are not an outlier, you are not the straggler back in the end, right? You are fine. But if you are an outlier, then that causes an alarm. Right? It doesn't mean that you are ineffective. But it causes an alarm where a chair ought to be looking at, you know, what's going on with this course. And maybe you taught it first time. Maybe you had some really bad class. Maybe they put you in a class with 20 chairs and you had a 30 students. So 10 of them had to stand. Even stuff like that happens, right?
Okay, Bob, thank you so much for making the time to be here with us and for sharing your valuable insights on student evaluations.
Yes, thank you for having me here.
Lehrblick, Lehrporträts. Der Podcast wird Ihnen präsentiert vom Zentrum für Hochschul- und Wissenschaftsdidaktik der Universität Regensburg. Alle Folgen zum Nachhören sowie Inspirationen und Evidenzen für gute Hochschullehre finden Sie unter www.lehrblick.de.